Imagine a country with no army, where classrooms replaced barracks and forests rose where others built factories. A place that turned away from war, embraced peace, and became one of the greenest, most democratic nations on earth. This is the untold story of Costa Rica, how a small republic defied military rule, brokered regional peace, protected half a million species, and redefined what it means to lead without violence. From revolution to rainforest, this is not just a history, it's a blueprint for the future. Welcome to the History of the Caribbeans podcast. If you haven't already, please consider following us on your favorite podcast platform. Today, we present to you Costa Rica, A Journey Through Time, Episode 4. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 13, Storms and Stability, Navigating Regional Turmoil. When the region burned, Costa Rica stood in the eye of a storm, not untouched, but unshaken. When bullets echoed through the mountains of Guatemala, when tanks rolled through the streets of Managua, when rivers ran red in El Salvador, Costa Rica held its breath and walked a different path. It was not that the storms passed it by. It was that the country built something that could endure the winds, an invisible fortress of trust, of law, and of values that held even when the world around it seemed to fall apart. The second half of the 20th century was one of the most violent periods in Central American history. Across the isthmus, civil wars erupted. Military dictators rose and fell. The Cold War carved ideological trenches through small nations. Guerrilla movements formed in the mountains. Foreign troops landed in jungles. The United States and the Soviet Union turned countries into chessboards, proxies in a global power game. Between 1960 and 1996, over 300,000 people were killed in Guatemala, El Salvador, and Nicaragua alone. Torture, forced disappearances, mass displacements, and political repression became part of daily life in many places. And yet, through it all, Costa Rica remained at peace. No civil war, no military coup, no dictatorship, no armed rebellion. It was not immune to fear, to ideological pressure, or to economic strain, but it stood. And in that standing, it became not just an exception, but a regional conscience. The Cold War comes to Central America. In the wake of World War II, the world divided into two camps, the capitalist West, led by the United States, and the communist bloc, led by the Soviet Union. The Cold War wasn't fought through direct battles between these powers, but through influence, subversion, and intervention across the developing world. Central America, with its history of inequality, colonialism, and fragile institutions, became fertile ground for both leftist revolution and right-wing reaction. In Guatemala, a CIA-backed coup in 1954 overthrew democratically elected President Jacobo Arbenz, setting off decades of military rule and indigenous massacres. In Nicaragua, the brutal Somoza dictatorship ruled for decades before being overthrown by the Sandinista Revolution in 1979, which then faced an insurgent guerrilla war backed by the United States, the Contra War. In El Salvador, civil war between a U.S.-backed government and Marxist guerrillas raged for over a decade, leaving tens of thousands dead. In Honduras, the military ruled and allowed U.S. troops to station there as a regional base for Contra operations. Amid this, Costa Rica had no army, no violent revolution, and yet was surrounded by violence. The question was not if it would be pulled in, but how it would resist. A delicate dance, neutrality and principle. Costa Rica's position was precarious. It had strong diplomatic ties to the United States, relied on U.S. markets for its exports, and shared many democratic values with the West. At the same time, its political culture was sympathetic to social justice, labor rights, and progressive reforms, positions that aligned, at times, with leftist ideologies. Walking this line required extraordinary finesse. Under presidents like José Figueres Ferrer, Daniel Oduber, and later Rodrigo Carazo, Costa Rica maintained a position of principled neutrality. It condemned violence on both sides of the regional conflicts. It refused to host foreign military bases. It kept its borders open to refugees from El Salvador and Nicaragua. And it offered asylum to political exiles, even as it tried to maintain national cohesion. This was not without risks. Costa Rica was accused by both sides of being a haven for their enemies. At times, U.S. officials demanded stronger stances against communist infiltration. At others, leftist guerrillas accused the Costa Rican government of collaborating with U.S. intelligence. But through diplomacy and legalism, Costa Rica kept its footing. In 1983, President Luis Alberto Monge took a definitive step and declared Costa Rica's perpetual neutrality in foreign policy, formalizing its commitment to non-intervention and peaceful resolution of conflicts. Refugees and revolution at the door. The Nicaraguan Revolution in 1979 was perhaps the greatest test of Costa Rica's neutrality. The overthrow of the Somoza dictatorship by the Sandinistas was celebrated across much of Central America. In Costa Rica, reactions were mixed. Many sympathized with the revolutionary cause, having long denounced the Somoza regime's corruption and violence. But the post-revolution Sandinista government, with its alignment to Cuba and the Soviet Union, sparked concern among conservatives and in Washington. The Contra War, an insurgency launched by former Somoza loyalists and backed by the CIA, turned the Nicaraguan countryside into a war zone. And many of these Contras operated from the Costa Rican border, raising fears that Costa Rica's sovereignty would be violated. In fact, the U.S. began to pressure Costa Rica to allow arms shipments and covert operations from its territory. Some officials quietly cooperated. Others resisted. The result was a period of intense diplomatic strain, during which Costa Rica had to defend its neutrality not just with rhetoric, but with legal and moral authority. Costa Rica refused to allow its territory to become a staging ground for war, even when the most powerful country in the world leaned heavily on it to do so. Meanwhile, tens of thousands of refugees streamed across Costa Rica's borders. Some were combatants seeking rest or asylum. Most were civilians, mothers, children, the elderly, fleeing bullets and bombs. Costa Rica responded by becoming a refuge for the displaced, housing thousands in camps and urban neighborhoods. It was a humanitarian strain, and not all Costa Ricans welcomed the influx. But the country's leaders chose compassion over fear, offering the displaced not only shelter, but often a path to work and legal residency. Oscar Arias and the Peace Plan. The man who would define Costa Rica's regional legacy in this era was Oscar Arias Sanchez, elected president in 1986. Educated at Harvard and deeply committed to democratic principles, Arias stepped into office just as the wars in Nicaragua, El Salvador, and Guatemala reached their bloodiest peaks. Unlike his predecessors, who had mostly tried to stay out of the fray, Arias chose a different path, active mediation. He crafted a comprehensive peace proposal, the Esquipulas II Accord, which called for ceasefires in all Central American conflicts, amnesty for political prisoners, free and fair elections across the region, bans on foreign military aid and presence, guarantees for human rights and press freedom. It was bold, idealistic, and initially dismissed by hardliners on all sides. But Arias worked relentlessly, visiting regional capitals, convening summits, leaning on Costa Rica's moral credibility as a nation of peace. In 1987, the accord was signed by five Central American presidents. That same year, Arias was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize, not just for the plan, but for proving that diplomacy could work in a region long defined by violence. It was a crowning moment for Costa Rica, a nation without an army leading a region out of war. Security without soldiers. Even as the region calmed, Costa Rica faced new threats. With guerrilla armies giving way to criminal networks, drug trafficking, and transnational gangs, the challenges of the 1990s and 2000s were less ideological, more economic and structural. Costa Rica invested in modernizing its police force, expanding its intelligence services, and working with international partners to combat narco trafficking. It maintained strict civilian control, avoiding the militarization that plagued other nations. The key to this stability remained public trust in democratic institutions, a trust that had been built through decades of peaceful governance, transparency, and civic education. A beacon in the region, Today, Costa Rica continues to serve as a regional anchor, not because it is perfect, but because it never stopped choosing peace. It trains mediators, hosts diplomatic conferences, shelters environmental defenders, and offers refuge to journalists and dissidents. Its universities research conflict resolution. Its courts uphold human rights. Its leaders speak with moral authority, not coercive force. It has become a model not of military power, but of ethical statecraft. Conclusion: a storm survived, a standard set. In surviving the storms of the 20th century without succumbing to violence, Costa Rica did more than preserve itself. It redefined what was possible for small nations in dangerous neighborhoods. Its success did not come from luck. It came from conscious decisions to value education, to disarm, to open its borders, to listen before it shouted, and to protect democracy even when doing so was hard. In the next chapter, we will examine how Costa Rica built upon this foundation by deepening its democratic institutions, expanding civic participation, and redefining citizenship, not just as a right, but as a responsibility. Chapter 14, The People's Voice, Democracy in Practice. Democracy is not a document. It is not a constitution, a courtroom, or a vote cast once every 4 years. Democracy is a habit, learned, repeated, doubted, tested, and affirmed. It is the voice of a people, not always in harmony, but always in conversation. And in Costa Rica, that voice has never been silent. Quiet at times, conflicted, frustrated, hopeful, but never silenced. By the late 20th century, Costa Rica had already astonished the world twice. First by abolishing its military, and again by remaining peaceful through decades of regional conflict. But even more remarkable was its third achievement, building a culture of participatory democracy in which institutions were strong, elections meaningful, and citizens deeply engaged in the political process. Costa Rica's democracy did not appear overnight. It was carved like stone over decades through school curricula, court decisions, ballot boxes, protest marches, radio debates, editorial pages, and municipal council meetings. It was protected not by soldiers, but by citizens who understood that freedom is not self-sustaining. It must be worked for. This chapter explores how Costa Rica turned its constitutional promises into lived reality. It is the story of how the people found their voice, and how that voice shaped a nation unlike any other in Latin America. The Tribunal Supremo de Elecciones, guardian of the ballot. At the heart of Costa Rica's democratic system is a single institution whose name is spoken with reverence, the Tribunal Supremo de Elecciones, TSE, the Supreme Electoral Tribunal. Created in the wake of the 1948 Civil War, the TSE was designed to be entirely independent of executive, legislative, and judicial branches. It is not answerable to any political party, cannot be dismissed by the president, and has sole authority over all electoral processes. Its mandate includes organizing and overseeing elections, ensuring campaign finance transparency, certifying results, maintaining the National Civil Registry, which includes identity cards and voting rolls. Every Costa Rican voter has a Cédula Identidad, an identification card integrated into the civil registry, updated in real time. This system ensures near total voter participation accuracy, with minimal fraud and high public trust. Costa Ricans know that when they vote, the count will be honest, and that trust has made participation a ritual of national pride. Voter turnout routinely exceeds 60%, even in municipal elections. For presidential races, it's often over 70%. No one is required to vote, yet most do. And perhaps most impressively, there hasn't been a single serious allegation of systemic electoral fraud since 1949. Political pluralism and peaceful power transfers. Costa Rica's democracy is not dominated by a single party or ideology. Over the years, multiple political parties have risen, fallen, merged, and fractured, reflecting the diversity of public opinion in a society that does not fear change. For much of the late 20th century, two major parties dominated. The Partido Liberación Nacional PLN, founded by José Figueres Ferrer, which leaned center-left, promoted social democracy and invested heavily in state institutions. the Partido Unidad Social Cristiana, PUSC, a center-right party grounded in Christian democratic principles and economic liberalism. But over time, disillusionment with the two-party system led to the rise of new political movements, from environmentalists to libertarians to anti-corruption reformers. In 2002, the emergence of the Citizens Action Party, PAC, challenged the old order, and by 2014, PAC candidate Luis Guillermo Solís was elected president, marking a shift in the political landscape. Through all these changes, one tradition remained sacred: peaceful transitions of power. Costa Rica has experienced more than 20 presidential transitions since 1949, each conducted without a single shot fired, without a single power grab, and always under the watchful eye of the TSC and an informed citizenry. Democracy in the classroom, education as defense. Costa Rica's commitment to democracy is not confined to ballot boxes. It begins in classrooms. From a young age, Costa Rican children are taught civic education as a core subject. They learn the Constitution. They study government structure. They debate ethics, laws, rights, and responsibilities. They are encouraged to see democracy not as distant, but as personal. The Ministry of Public Education, MEP, has long emphasized that education is the best defense of democracy. School textbooks include lessons on the 1948 Civil War, the abolition of the military, the structure of democratic institutions, and the importance of freedom of speech. By the time they reach adulthood, Costa Ricans have not only learned to vote, they have learned to question, challenge, and participate. This culture of democratic literacy has produced generations of engaged citizens who are unafraid to organize protests, form unions, run for office, or challenge court rulings. Democracy in Costa Rica is not theoretical. It is practiced in the streets, in the papers, in the classrooms, and at the kitchen table. Freedom of the press and civil society. Another pillar of Costa Rica's democratic resilience is its free and robust press. The country ranks among the highest in the Western Hemisphere for press freedom, according to Reporters Without Borders and Freedom House. Journalists are rarely censored, never imprisoned, and are protected by constitutional guarantees. Newspapers like La Nación, La República, and El Financiero, as well as investigative digital outlets and local radio stations, play a critical role in keeping the government accountable. Scandals, corruption, and policy failures are dissected publicly and without fear. Beyond the press, civil society organizations have flourished: environmental watchdogs, indigenous rights groups, feminist collectives, anti-corruption NGOs, student unions, and LGBTQ plus advocacy groups. These organizations form the connective tissue between government and people, allowing democracy to breathe and evolve. No system is without flaws. But in Costa Rica, the mechanisms to address those flaws are not only present, they are trusted. The role of the judiciary, a final arbiter. Costa Rica's constitutional chamber of the Supreme Court, known as the Sala Four, has played a critical role in upholding democratic norms. Citizens can file a recurso de amparo, writ of protection, if they feel their constitutional rights have been violated. These writs are reviewed by the Sala Four, which can rule against the state, the police, private corporations, even the presidency. This direct access to judicial review has made constitutional rights tangible and enforceable. The judiciary's independence is one of the country's greatest democratic assets. Judges are appointed by the legislature through public processes and are insulated from political interference. Even the most powerful leaders must obey the law or face its consequences. Protest as a national tradition. In Costa Rica, protest is not taboo, it's a civic right. Strikes by teachers, marches by indigenous communities, blockades by farmers, student demonstrations, all are familiar and generally respected by the police, who are trained to de-escalate rather than suppress. The Constitution explicitly protects freedom of assembly, and police are generally unarmed during peaceful demonstrations, carrying shields rather than rifles, trained to protect life and rights, not assert dominance. Not every protest is successful. Not every law is popular. But Costa Ricans know that they can raise their voices and that someone is listening. Challenges to the model. Of course, democracy in Costa Rica is not perfect, and its people are the first to say so. Corruption scandals have rocked multiple administrations. Bureaucratic inefficiencies frustrate everyday citizens. Inequality, especially along the Caribbean coast and rural areas, threatens the sense of shared prosperity. The rise of digital misinformation poses new challenges to the integrity of public discourse. Political polarization, while still moderate by regional standards, has begun to creep into national debates. But Costa Rica faces these challenges not with repression, but with institutional dialogue, free elections, and a culture of civic resilience. Democracy in Costa Rica is self-correcting. It falters, but it rights itself. Because the people have learned, generation after generation, how to keep it alive. Conclusion: a voice that does not fade. Costa Rica's democracy is not just a system. It is a national inheritance, passed down not as myth, but as method. It lives in the Constitution, yes, but more importantly, it lives in conversations, community meetings, radio call-in shows, student councils, and Supreme Court rulings. The people's voice, educated, engaged, and empowered, is the true defense of the Republic. In the next chapter, we'll examine how Costa Rica took this democratic spirit beyond its borders, emerging as a quiet but powerful force in international diplomacy, human rights advocacy, and environmental leadership across the globe. Chapter 15: The Global Citizen, Costa Rica on the World Stage. Most nations wield power through armies, economies, or resources. Costa Rica wields it through example. In an age of bombs and bluster, it speaks softly and is heard. In international halls and climate summits, in peace negotiations and human rights forums, this small Central American nation sits at the table not because it demands to, but because it deserves to. It is a country that has proven you don't have to be big to be brave or powerful to lead. Throughout the 20th and into the 21st century, Costa Rica has positioned itself as a moral voice in global affairs, an advocate for peace, democracy, environmental protection, and human rights. This role is not a performance, nor is it accidental. It is the product of decades of deliberate choices, rooted in national values that prioritize justice over dominance, dialogue over confrontation. Despite its modest size and lack of military force, Costa Rica has emerged as a global citizen in the truest sense, a country that participates not from the margins, but from a place of integrity and earned respect. Diplomacy in the DNA, from Figueres to Arias. Costa Rica's international identity as a peacemaker can be traced back to the leadership of José Figueres Ferrer, who not only abolished the military in 1948, but consistently promoted Costa Rica as a neutral and non-aligned state during the Cold War. Figueres was among the first to argue that peace could be exported, not through force, but through example. But it was under President Oscar Arias Sanchez that Costa Rica's diplomatic voice became truly global. In the mid-1980s, as civil wars raged through Nicaragua, El Salvador, and Guatemala, Arias refused to let his nation be used as a proxy base or a political pawn. Instead, he took the extraordinary step of drafting and promoting the Esquipulas II Peace Agreement, a comprehensive plan to end Central America's conflicts through diplomacy, ceasefires, elections, and human rights guarantees. The plan was met with skepticism. Why would a country with no army take the lead in peace negotiations? What leverage did Costa Rica have? And yet, by 1987, five Central American presidents had signed the agreement. That same year, Arias was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize, placing Costa Rica firmly on the world stage. It was not just an honor for him. It was a validation of Costa Rica's entire political model. The world had taken notice, and it would not stop noticing. United Nations leadership and global advocacy. Costa Rica has long been an active member of the United Nations, where it has used its voice to champion international law, conflict prevention, and disarmament. In 1983, Costa Rica was one of the first nations to sign and promote the Declaration on the Right to Peace, arguing that peace is not merely the absence of war, but a fundamental human right. Costa Rica has served multiple terms on the UN Security Council as a non-permanent member, and its diplomats have helped shape global resolutions on nuclear disarmament. international criminal law, climate change accountability, human rights protections for women, children, and indigenous peoples. One of Costa Rica's most powerful tools in diplomacy has been its commitment to international treaties and multilateral cooperation. While other nations hedge or withdraw, Costa Rica signs, ratifies, and implements. It has become a champion of international institutions, believing that small nations are best protected not by arms, but by rules, and by a world that honors them. Champion of human rights. Costa Rica's constitution guarantees sweeping rights, but it doesn't stop at its borders. The country has become a regional leader in human rights advocacy, often serving as a safe haven for dissidents, exiles, and refugees fleeing authoritarian regimes. It hosts the Inter-American Court of Human Rights, headquartered in San Jose, a body created by the Organization of American States, OAS, to adjudicate violations of the American Convention on Human Rights. Through this court, Costa Rica has prosecuted crimes against humanity, advanced LGBTQ plus rights across the region, affirmed protections for freedom of expression, due process, and political participation, challenged repressive laws passed in neighboring countries. Costa Rica is also one of the first Latin American countries to recognize same-sex marriage, legalized in 2020, marking a bold step in social progressivism rooted in legal equity. Its influence comes not from military threat or economic coercion, but from consistency. In an increasingly transactional world, Costa Rica has become a moral constant, a global environmental leader. Costa Rica's voice on climate and environmental protection has grown louder with each passing decade. It is consistently ranked among the world's greenest countries, and it has used that platform to challenge wealthier nations to do more. In 2019, Costa Rica launched its decarbonization plan, aiming to become one of the world's first fully decarbonized economies by 2050. The plan focuses on transitioning to 100% renewable energy, already over 98% achieved, electrifying the public transportation system, reforesting and protecting biodiversity corridors, incentivizing sustainable agriculture and tourism. In global summits, from the UN climate change conferences, COPs, to the Paris Agreement, Costa Rica has not only shown up, but led. Its former diplomat, Cristiana Figueres, played a pivotal role in brokering the 2015 Paris Climate Accord, earning her international acclaim as one of the most influential environmental negotiators in the world. Costa Rica's leadership is not about preaching. It's about proving that environmental policy can work and can align with economic prosperity, human development, and social well-being. Soft power and cultural diplomacy. Costa Rica's global influence also extends through soft power, the ability to shape the preferences of others through culture, values, and example. Its brand is built on peace, education, biodiversity, and sustainability. Internationally, Costa Rica is viewed as a country with no army, a country with a thriving democracy, a country that protects nature, a country that prioritizes human dignity. This brand has become a national asset. Costa Rican diplomacy often emphasizes public diplomacy, engaging foreign populations through cultural exchange, educational partnerships, and visibility at international forums. Its universities welcome students from across the world. Its environmental institutions collaborate with global researchers. Its parks host international conservation teams. It is a country known not for imposing its will, but for offering its wisdom, mediation, neutrality, and international law. Because of its neutrality, Costa Rica has often been chosen to host peace negotiations, diplomatic summits, and conflict resolution forums. It played a quiet but essential role in facilitating dialogues between conflicting parties in Nicaragua, El Salvador, Colombia, Venezuela. It has repeatedly called for nuclear disarmament, global regulation of arms trade, the protection of civilians during war, the banning of autonomous weapons, AI warfare. Costa Rica has also been a fierce defender of international criminal justice, supporting the International Criminal Court, ICC, and advocating for accountability for crimes against humanity. In short, it has used its diplomatic presence not to promote itself, but to amplify the causes that define its national soul. Conclusion: a small country with a global conscience. Costa Rica may not command armies, launch satellites, or dominate global markets. But it does something far rarer. It leads by moral clarity. In a world where power is often confused with volume, Costa Rica whispers and is heard. Its global citizenship is built not on wealth or intimidation, but on decades of consistency, protecting peace, defending rights, honoring nature, and believing in the law. Costa Rica does not pretend to be perfect. It does not aspire to empire. But it knows who it is, and it knows what kind of world it wants to live in. In the final chapter, we will explore how Costa Rica looks forward, facing the 21st century with all its challenges, from technology and inequality to climate threats and cultural transformation, and how this small republic continues to imagine new ways to live in harmony with itself, its people, and the planet. Chapter 16, Tomorrow's Republic, Costa Rica in the 21st Century. To stand still is to fall behind. Even for a country defined by peace, wisdom, and preservation, the future does not wait. The 21st century has brought new currents, technological tides, climate storms, shifting global orders, and generational demands for justice and voice. Costa Rica, ever resilient, does not hide from change. It listens, adapts, reinvents. Tomorrow, for this republic, is not a threat. It is an invitation. As Costa Rica moves deeper into the 21st century, it stands at a crossroads between preservation and transformation. Its democratic traditions, ecological vision, and international credibility remain strong, but so too are the pressures of a rapidly evolving world. Globalization, economic competition, climate threats, digital disruption, and rising inequality present challenges that no nation, however noble its past, can avoid. This chapter explores how Costa Rica is navigating the uncertain terrain of modernity, how it is responding, reforming, and reimagining its institutions, its economy, its values, and its place in the world. Because Costa Rica's story is not just what it has been, it is what it is becoming. A digital nation in formation. In an age where data moves faster than decisions, Costa Rica has increasingly invested in its digital infrastructure and technological literacy. With no military to fund, the government has long directed its budget toward public services, and over the past two decades, this has included digital modernization. Through programs like Costa Rica Digital 4.0, the state aims to expand broadband access to rural and marginalized communities, integrate e-government services to reduce bureaucracy and increase transparency, foster digital education through STEM initiatives and virtual classrooms, promote cybersecurity protocols in the public and private sectors. Public schools are being equipped with computer labs and internet access, and coding is being introduced into early curricula. Private tech firms, attracted by political stability and educated talent, are increasingly investing in Costa Rica's tech parks and innovation hubs, especially around San Jose, Heredia, and Alajuela. Costa Rica now positions itself as a nearshoring destination for technology services, with companies outsourcing software development, customer support, and AI-related research to the country. But with digital growth comes new risks: disinformation, data privacy concerns, and online extremism. Costa Rica's institutions are tasked not only with building a digital society, but with defending its democratic ethos in the virtual realm. Climate crisis and environmental adaptation. Costa Rica's environmental leadership is well known, but the climate crisis has shifted the terrain. No longer is the question just how to protect nature. Now, the country must confront how to survive in a world where nature is changing faster than policies can catch up. Rising temperatures have affected crop yields. Irregular rainfall threatens hydropower production. Coastal communities face sea level rise, storm surges, and erosion. Biodiversity corridors, once stable, are now vulnerable to drought, fire, and invasive species. In response, Costa Rica has embraced climate adaptation as its next great frontier. Its national decarbonization plan is being revised to focus not just on reducing emissions, but also on water security in both highland and coastal regions. urban planning to manage climate migration and heat islands. Reforestation with climate-resilient species. Climate-smart agriculture to protect food security and rural livelihoods. Costa Rica is also working with international partners on carbon markets, green bonds, and climate finance mechanisms to ensure that sustainability remains not just a moral ideal, but an economic asset. But the challenges are immense. Even a green republic cannot isolate itself from global emissions. And so Costa Rica's voice grows louder in international forums, urging richer nations to act faster, pay more, and honor the ecological debt owed to the world's most vulnerable. A new social contract, equity, inclusion, and youth. As Costa Rica celebrates its past achievements, a new generation is asking harder questions. Why does poverty persist in rural and coastal areas? Why do indigenous communities still lack equal access to land, education, and healthcare? Why do Afro-Costa Ricans face subtle but persistent discrimination in employment and media? Why do young people struggle to find meaningful work in a country known for education? The answers are not simple. Costa Rica's successes have been real, but so have its inequities. And now, civil society is calling for a new social contract, one that rebalances power, redistributes opportunity, and amplifies voices long excluded. Movements for LGBTQ+ rights, gender equality, anti-racism, and indigenous sovereignty are no longer fringe. They are mainstream demands. Students march in San Jose to protest education cuts. Farmers block highways over food import policies. Migrants demand dignity and due process. These are not signs of collapse. They are signs of democratic muscle. The government has responded with a mix of reform and resistance. The legalization of same-sex marriage in 2020 was a landmark moment. Efforts to pass gender parity laws in politics and business have gained traction. Bilingual education programs are expanding in Afro-Caribbean and indigenous territories. Anti-corruption drives and fiscal transparency laws have gained ground. But austerity measures, pushed in part by IMF debt agreements, have strained public trust. Costa Rica's democracy is alive, but it is under revision. The people are not walking away from it. They are reshaping it. Migration, mobility, and identity in flux. Geographically located at the bridge between North and South America, Costa Rica continues to be a magnet for migration from Nicaragua, Venezuela, Haiti, Colombia, and beyond. It has long been praised for its humanitarian approach, offering asylum and residency to refugees and displaced people. But increasing migration has also led to social friction, especially in times of economic downturn. Some citizens fear job competition, strain on public services, or cultural change. The government faces a balancing act: uphold its international commitments to refugees, protect its labor markets and public institutions, combat rising xenophobia in political discourse and on social media. This moment is shaping a new Costa Rican identity, multilingual, multicultural, and layered with complexity. The myth of a monocultural white mestizo republic is being replaced by a mosaic of realities. For many young Costa Ricans, the question is no longer who are we, but rather who will we choose to be? Women in power, youth in protest. The rise of women in leadership roles has reshaped Costa Rican politics. Laura Chinchilla, elected president in 2010, became the first woman to hold the office, and she did so without symbolic tokenism. Her presidency was marked by investments in public security, education, and gender equity. Women now serve as Supreme Court justices, cabinet ministers, mayors, university rectors, and heads of major state institutions. At the same time, young people are taking to the streets and the internet with bold demands for climate justice, affordable housing, racial equality, educational access, and mental health care. TikTok videos become political manifestos. Protest signs quote poetry. Podcasts and YouTube channels dissect constitutional law. This is a generation that knows its rights and expects more than tradition. It expects transparency, empathy, and innovation from those in power. It does not fear challenging sacred cows. And it sees democracy not as something inherited, but as something to be rewritten in its own voice. The future of neutrality. In a world that seems increasingly divided between democracy and autocracy, truth and disinformation, nationalism and cooperation, Costa Rica's traditional stance of perpetual neutrality is once again under review. Can a neutral nation remain so in the face of global authoritarianism, ecological collapse, and regional instability? The country faces complex choices. Should it speak out more forcefully against rights violations in neighboring states? Should it support international sanctions? Should it deepen its engagement with NATO or EU security frameworks? Can neutrality coexist with global moral leadership? So far, Costa Rica continues to walk a careful line, but one informed by ethical clarity rather than silence. Conclusion: a republic in renewal. Costa Rica today is not a utopia. It is a nation grappling with complexity. It faces climate threats, economic pressures, social divides, and technological disruption. But it faces them with something most nations would trade almost anything to possess: cohesion, institutional trust, and a public that still believes in its own capacity to steer the ship. It is a country where the Constitution is not just taught, but challenged and lived. Where nature is not just preserved, but valued and reimagined. Where the past is not a chain, but a foundation for possibility. Where the future is not feared, but negotiated, carefully, creatively, collectively. Tomorrow's republic is already here. It is growing in classrooms, city councils, farms, labs, courtrooms, and on the streets. It speaks with many voices, wears many colors, and walks with the confidence of a country that has fallen, risen, and reinvented itself again and again. The story of Costa Rica is far from over. It is, in many ways, just beginning.